Okay, so people sometimes will look at the self-regulation rubric and they will ask, how do we administer this during a child find or eligibility process versus how do we do this in an ongoing or what we often call formative assessment or program planning or intervention planning perspective? So let's just step back for a minute and let's just talk about maybe two or three things. First of all, there are several different purposes of assessment. We do screening, which is developmental and behavioral screening. There's also universal screening for the idea of MTSS and RTI, but for early childhood assessment purposes, we generally talk about screening as developmental and behavioral, which is to determine if a child needs additional testing, not does the child need additional supports and services. The second purpose is eligibility. Many people will call that the child find process. This is where we determine if a child meets state rules around eligibility as a student or a child with a disability. Third purpose is to plan instruction, and hopefully that is tiered instruction. So it could be planning common outcomes and universally designed instruction for all children, targeted and focused instruction for children when they are struggling, and then individualized outcomes that are taught through really systematic instruction. If it is a child on an IEP at that level, it might be planning specially designed instruction. So that might be the role of the child find team in terms of making recommendations if a child is found eligible for early childhood special ed. Might be the IEP team itself that's making recommendations for how to provide services and supports around IEP goals. And it could certainly be the providing team as they plan day-to-day intentional instruction for a child. The next reason that we do assessment in early childhood is performance monitoring or progress monitoring. And this is to determine if a child is making progress towards intended outcomes or progress towards identified individualized outcomes, which might be on their IFSP or IEP. We also do performance monitoring for other purposes, which will take us into the next one, which is program evaluation. We may look at child outcomes or child data as part of whether or not a program is high quality or meets standards in a particular state for quality indicators, and or we may look at child performance data for accountability, which is our last purpose of assessment. And this is for justification of dollars spent on a program or a child or an initiative. And so for accountability, where we might determine a child's broad changes in learning and development over time, is what we call accountability. So that performance monitoring can be at the child and the intervention level, which is day-to-day. How are we doing to adjust our intentional instruction? That's what we usually call performance monitoring, which is the bookend to program planning or intervention planning. But we also collect data and make evaluation decisions, evaluative, I should say, decisions for program evaluation and accountability. So that's a lot to say. There are many different purposes for which we make decisions. Second point, decision making is the fifth part of a data-driven decision-making framework. So that means we start off with gathering, we move into documenting, summarizing, analyzing, then we interpret. So when people say, how would I use the self-regulation rubric if I'm doing child find versus I'm doing program planning versus I'm doing accountability, let's say for statewide indicator number 7 or what we sometimes call OSEP reporting, it would be very different at only the fifth step. Maybe the fourth and fifth step of the data-driven decision-making process would look different. So remember, there's 5 steps. First step is we gather information. Well, how do we gather information? It does not matter the purpose for which I'm doing assessment. I should always gather information using authentic assessment practices. That means familiar people in familiar settings with familiar materials doing familiar things. Familiar is another way to say unbiased, another way to say it makes sense, or what we call socially valid. It's another way to say play-based. It's another way to say attuned to this child. There's many different ways to think of what the word authentic means, but we want the most trustworthy and consistent conclusions to be drawn in the end. And so how do we stack the deck to make sure that we are making trustworthy and consistent decisions as our fifth step? And that's by gathering information using authentic assessment practices. Regardless of whether I'm doing screening, eligibility, program planning, progress monitoring, program evaluation, or accountability, always we do it the same exact way. Are there different timelines? Are there different people? Are there different hoops? Are there different barriers, challenges? Absolutely. However, if our end result is to make accurate and trustworthy and consistent decisions that have a positive impact on the child, we must find a way to be the most authentic as we can, regardless of purpose. The second step is we're going to document. So documenting, you can use numbers, you can use words, you can use color coding. The thing you just want to be careful of is we don't want to use a dichotomous scale. So pluses and minuses are fine, but not just pluses and minuses. You need at least three things to help you look at the variability. So you don't want any kind of documentation that is yes or no, red or green, smiley face, unhappy face. We want to do everything that's got at least 3 points. And that's even in our anecdotal notes. We don't want to just write the child didn't do it or the child did do it. We want to talk about the variability, the conditions, the context, the situation, if you will. So we always want to document, whether it's with words, with numbers, or in some sort of visual way, in a way that is beyond dichotomous. Third thing we want to think about is summarizing. So don't jump straight to drawing conclusions. We want to summarize the data in some way. So again, you can use numbers, words, or visually. You can put all of the things the child does well together, all the things that are emerging, all the things that are not yet. You can do all the things that the child has to do when they're in the green zone versus all the things they do when they're in the red or the blue, or red, blue, and green zone, so that you can start to see where the child is falling outside of the zone of optimal learning. You could talk about what does the child do at home, at school, or in the community. You could do something about what the child does during the morning versus the afternoon, what the child does when it's self-guided versus when it's one-on-one with an adult versus when it's a small group versus when it's whole group. So you can summarize in lots of different configurations, again, using numbers, words, or some sort of visual like a Venn diagram. And then you're ready to analyze. So I alluded to that analyzing could look a little different depending on the decision that you're going to make or the purpose for which you're doing the assessment. The reason that is because you may have different people and you may have different criteria that you're going to compare the child to. So basically, analyzing is looking for patterns and trends. You're trying to start to look at those summaries and make meaning out of it. If you have multiple team members, this is a beautiful time to get different perspectives. What do you see in this pattern or trend? Does this pattern or trend make you nervous or not? If you go back to any time I've interpreted the self-regulation assessment rubric, I try to tell you, I'm not worried about this. And you're like, but why aren't you worried about it? And I'll talk to you about the age of the child or what's happening concurrently in development or what's coming before or what happened after or the context, because I know what was going on for the child that day, or I know how much time the child spends with screens or how they have a lack of sleep. So different team members will have different insight, different histories, different expertise to help analyze. Sometimes you might just be on your own, and that's just the way it goes. And so you don't have that valuable perspective of other people. But hopefully you have the child's family and caregivers that know them well and hang out with them when they're not with you, that can also lend insight into analyzing, what does this look like to you? What does this mean to you? What parts of it are you worried about? What parts of it aren't you worried about? Again, from your history, your expertise, your discipline-specific knowledge. There are things that many, many disciplines will know far more than I will know about, or people have more experience with older children or with literacy or with autism, or if somebody has a different language or culture or background than I do, that's going to bring such a richness to this conversation. So the analyzing can look a little different because if you're a part of a child find team, you might have different disciplines that can lend their voice to the conversation. If you're doing program planning, it might be a teacher and the paraprofessional and a parent, and that's all the richer of a discussion you can have, though there may be others in the building, even another teacher, your building principal, a special ed director, an itinerant teacher, somebody who can help look at the patterns and trends, especially where you want to start drawing hypotheses. But again, it doesn't really look different in how I would use the self-regulation rubric across assessment purposes all the way until I get to the fifth part of the data-driven decision-making framework. And that's where we interpret or we actually make a decision. So that's where all the difference is. We go back to what was my original purpose for doing this in the first place. Now, you might have several purposes. You might use the self-regulation rubric for some sort of tiered instructional universal screener where you're trying to see if a child is struggling in a particular area. You might then administer some sort of targeted or more focused intervention, and you want to see if they're responding to that. So you're doing a little bit of program planning, a little bit of progress monitoring, but then your teaching strategy's goal happens to be due that week as well. And you may want to use the data to plug into your teaching strategy's goal global assessment for a child so that you can do accountability reporting and or maybe a state verification or licensing data is also due, and this is part of your evidence of how the child scores on your curriculum-based assessment, like the teaching strategies gold. So again, you can use the data for multiple purposes, but you need to be careful that each of those purposes may have different criteria, and they may be looking for you to interpret things slightly different. So if I'm using the rubric for program planning and progress monitoring within a tiered model, I might be looking for specific change on one aspect of the rubric, like attention or regulation, somewhere where we gave really focused intervention. And we may have even broken down some of these bullets on the rubric into smaller scope and sequence. But when I go to my teaching strategies goals, now I'm going to be looking at broad skills, and I don't expect children to change in big skills in small amount of time. It takes a lot of time to change in big skills. So I might use this just to help me interpret why is a child not making progress on counting or letter identification. So there's maybe not these particular items on the teaching strategies goal, but it helps me interpret that I'm not going to worry that the child is not yet counting or doing letter identification because I can still see that they ride the red train often, that they're pretty impulsive, that they don't have a lot of focus and attention. And we know that those are foundations to being able to do recall, to being able to do, activate that memory part of the prefrontal cortex, that ability to sequence, that ability to do one-to-one correspondence, that ability to do symbolic representation. So I would score the child maybe a little bit lower on my teaching strategies goal, but as I interpret it, I'm not going to be worried about their performance. I'm not going to say that is a delay and suggest the child needs to have an IEP in that area. So again, I'm looking at it very differently based upon what kind of conclusions I'm going to draw. And that's that fifth step of interpreting. And so whether you're trying to decide, A, is it a screener and the child needs more testing or not? B, is the child eligible and have I created a body of evidence that suggests that they are eligible? C, have I engaged in program planning within a tiered model of intentional instruction? D, have I measured progress on tiered and intentional teaching? A, B, C, D, E, F. I don't know which I should have done numbers. Am I doing program evaluation or am I doing accountability? And so I might look slightly differently at the data depending on if it's my sole source, the thing I'm doing at tier two, it's part of my body of evidence for eligibility, or it's what's helping me draw conclusions for how I'm going to score the teaching strategies gold.